Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. Today's podcast, the second last of the season preview podcast, we're going to be covering the Miami Heat. And to help me talk all things Miami Heat, I'm joined by the one and only Mark Roberts. Mark, how are you?
I'm good, Josh. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to have you on again. And Miami Heat,
It actually showed up this time.
I know. No issues holding you back. Everything good with all your kids. You're here, and this is the first preview podcast you're on, I think, for this season.
Yep. I was supposed to be on Portland, but I was a no-show. So I'm happy you had me back.
You're here now, and we're going to talk Heat, and they're a team who has tremendous potential to improve. I think that they're going to be the most improved team this season. I think they're going to have the biggest difference in their win-loss total from last season. I know a lot of people disagree with me, but I can see them getting a 13-14 win improvement over last season. Things obviously have to go right, but it's not to do with the moves they made in the offseason necessarily. It's to do with the players they have being healthy and gelling, the return of Chris Bosh, the integration of Goran Dragic, a full season of Hassan Whiteside, a healthy Josh McRoberts. All these sort of things are important. What's your thought on this team? Are they a team that can legitimately push for a top four seed in the East?
I think so. I mean, I don't even know who you would put in the conversation besides the Heat is the team for the most wins. It would be Oklahoma City, I guess.
Yeah, Oklahoma City.
Probably the other obvious team.
Well, the one that people always kept throwing at me, which I disagreed with, was Indiana. And I said, no, that's not – I don't see that happening. Yeah, the other one as well that can happen is Orlando.
Yeah. Yep. I think I would expect the Heat to get the second or third seed would be, you know, I haven't really looked at it and slotted all the teams how I would have them finishing, but I would, yeah, just off the top of my head, I think Cleveland's a clear one, and then Miami's probably in that next group of guys, teams that you think is going to get home court advantage.
Yeah, I think that's probably the fair way to look at it. They're a massive chance for the two seed, or the three, or the four. I guess it depends on a lot how it works out with them and Chicago and Washington and Toronto. All those teams are Atlanta, sort of relatively interchangeable. They can go lots of different ways. Before I get into talking about the Heat, there was something I was meant to mention off the top, Mark. NFBKC, High Stakes Fantasy Basketball. You ever played in it before?
I've never played in that before, no.
Well, Mark, you do have your opportunity to play this year because I'm going to be looking at hosting a Red Rock NFBKC league. It is a relatively high stakes league. It's $350 entry fee with a chance to win. I think probably the first prize pool will be $1,400. They're 8-cat roto leagues. And I'm looking at setting something up with the guys at NFBKC. So if anyone who listens to this podcast is interested in joining this sort of league with a chance at some real cash on the line, please let me know. Send me an email and we can get it set up. I've already got a few people who are interested in joining this league. But if you are interested, check out the website, which is nfbkc.stats.com, and see the all sort of stuff they do. But I am looking at running a Red Rock version of the league. So if you are interested in joining that league, so it'll be a $350 entry league with first prize pool at about $1,500 and possibly the overall prize of about $10,000. So if you are interested in that, please let me know. It'd be interesting to get some money from some fantasy leagues, Mark.
Yeah, that would be cool. That's just pocket change for you, though, isn't it, Josh?
No. Yeah, Mark, that's exactly how I roll. That's like a weekend for me, clearly. Now, back to the Heat. Sorry for that interruption. I meant to throw that in earlier. The guys they added, Amari Stoudemire, Gerald Green, both on minimum contracts, which is great if you're playing in a real salary league like we do. What sort of role do you see Stoudemire and Green playing? Are they going to have significant roles?
Well, I mean, I think you have to look at them each individually a little bit differently. I mean, Stoudemire has an opportunity for a real role there just because we still don't really know what Whiteside is. They have kind of a – that's not where their depth is as much as in the on the wings. But I think that they're going to try to keep Stoudemire healthy, so I think that's going to mean limiting his minutes. I don't think he'll play a lot of games where he plays more than 15 to 20 minutes. We know he can be a very prolific fantasy basketball player. That hasn't changed because he's played less minutes. It just has limited his opportunity to provide that value. So I think he'll still be prolific like on a per possession or a per minute basis. but I don't think like you'll see him get the opportunity he would need in a standard league to actually give you that value. I think something 15 to 20 minutes is probably what to expect from him per night.
Yeah, look, I've got him at about 20 minutes at the moment as that sort of second backup big with Josh McRoberts there as well. And we've heard lots of talk about Hassan Whiteside going to be limited in certain situations when they play small. Stoudemire is more, as much as he's not small, but he's more suited to play small if they do go that route. He can play center in a smaller lineup. He still is quite a dynamic offensive guy, even though, you know, we know his career is rolling to an end. Even last season, he was able to put up pretty decent numbers when he was able to get a role with New York. He didn't do much in Dallas, but when he gets minutes, the numbers come. He's going to score. He's going to get decent block shots, some okay rebounds, really nice percentages. And he's that deeper league sort of guy, 16-team league player, where you can get a little bit of value out of him. The upside isn't high. Unless an injury happens in Miami and he's pushed into a bigger role, they're probably not going to want to risk him too much, but he's...
Yeah, see, I think even if Bosch gets hurt or something, I don't see it Stoudemire taking a big minute load because I think they want to keep him.
McRoberts is going to...
in that same role, yeah.
McRoberts will take the bigger role, but he might go from 20 minutes to 24 minutes or something like that, which pushes him into the back end of 12-team league discussion. He's never going to be a top 100 player. They're never going to go with him 30 minutes a night. But he's going to be an interesting player from a daily fantasy perspective as well, where there will be some nights where they play him 25, 27 minutes. He'll be on a minimum salary, and he'll be able to put up pretty big numbers. You just remember that the ability for him to do it is there. The ability for him to do it consistently probably isn't, and that's the distinction I think that needs to be made when we look at Amari Stoudemire. Gerald Green, a really weird season from Gerald Green last season, I think is probably the best way of putting it. He had stretches where he was really productive. He had stretches where he went missing, and that was a lot of that was rotation-based, where he was just left out of the rotation after a really productive 2013-14 season. He saw his minutes drop from 28 down to 20 a game. I think that probably 20 a game is the right spot for him again this season because he's going to be in a bench role. What's your take on Gerald Green?
He's another guy, just like Stoudemire, who's really valuable like on a per-possession basis. Last year, I think most people would say, hey, he had a down season. He averaged 30 points per 100 possessions, which is really, really high.
Yep.
He averaged almost 5 3-pointers per 100 possessions. Averaged a bunch of rebound. Like he was on a per possession basis, he was a top 65 player. He's really good, fantasy wise. I just don't see where the minutes come from. You got Wade and Dang as the primary guys. Then you've got Winslow, who they're going to try to bring along. I think Green is a strictly like a daily games. When he gets plugged into the lineup, you're going to want to plug him into your lineup. When Wade sits or Winslow isn't playing well, or there's any indication he's going to get 25 to 30 minutes in a given night, you're going to want to try to take advantage of that. But I don't see the opportunity, the role there for him to produce on a nightly basis.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much accurate, is that he's going to get those opportunities, much like Stoudemire, but it's going to be from time to time. It's not going to be consistent. And you're right, those numbers he put up last year were really, really impressive in terms of per-possession numbers. He just didn't get a big enough role, and he's not going to get that sort of role this season. So don't be anticipating too much out of Gerald Green. He's not someone that you want anything to do with in terms of drafting in standard leagues, but he's someone you want to keep an eye on, and he's someone that you want to look at for daily games. The guys that they lost, Shabazz Napier traded to Orlando. He wasn't going to have much of an impact, and Zoran Dragic, he's gone as well from the team. He was traded to Boston.
I wish my brother was an NBA player.
Yeah,
and then I could be an NBA player like Zoran,
and just keep getting these contracts and traded around, and he's headed back to Europe now, hasn't he?
I think so. No, I mean I think with Stoudemire and just back to those three guys, I think that's why maybe we're optimistic about them. Like last year when guys went down or they needed to fill in, Michael Beasley became a very important player on their team.
Yep.
And this year they're filling that role with guys like Stoudemire and Green, who are real NBA players who can make a. You know, who can keep them afloat for a night or a week. And that, you know, when Wade can't play, they can still win some games.
Well, they can run.
Can't play, they can still win.
They can run a backup, just a backup five of Mario Chalmers, Gerald Green, Justice Winslow, Amari Stoudemire, Josh McRoberts. Like, that's their five backups at each position.
Yeah.
And that'd beat the Sixers pretty much.
Yeah, I was just going to say, they could beat the Sixers.
Yeah, and that's a backup. Yeah, that's... They're second five, so they've got a legit 5-man bench unit who, if you had to rest all of the starters, those guys could come in and they could actually win a game. They could win more than, you know, one game. They'd be decent players against numerous teams. They could go up against the Knicks and give them a challenge. They could go up against the Lakers and challenge them. They're solid guys. McRoberts has proven he's got the ability to start in NBA games. In Justice Winslow, we don't know what he's going to be able to do, but that Gerald Green and Stoudemire, one-game basis, there's stuff they can do. Mario Chalmers has been a starter on championship teams. There is a lot to like with the way that they improved their depth this season. They had a really, really good off-season. In saying that, though, what are the young players on this team? There is only a couple of guys that have been drafted in the last couple of seasons with Shabazz Napier moving on to Orlando. Justice Winslow and Josh Richardson, who were both drafted this season, Winslow in the first round and Josh Richardson in the second. Let's start with Winslow because everyone was shocked that he slipped to pick 10. Everyone thought he was a surefire top 5 candidate. What's your take on him sliding to Miami, his fantasy outlook for this season, and his fantasy outlook moving forward?
So first of all, we've talked about this before. I don't watch a ton of college basketball. Yep. So I can't say I was outraged that he fell. I certainly was surprised. And I think that he probably came out pretty fortunate from the draft, that they got a guy who was supposed to go high in the draft. They got him so much later in the draft. That said, he's not going to start. He's not going to start over Wade or Dane. Gerald Green may play over him some nights. Who knows? Even Tyler Johnson may play over him some nights. So first of all, I'm not sure there's a great opportunity there. Second of all, Winslow, just from, you know, my stats translation, he doesn't translate to like being a prolific offensive player. He could be a very good NBA player. My guess is a lot of that value will come on the defensive end as a solid, great defensive contributor. But he doesn't project to be like, you know, so high in the rankings like Karl Anthony Towns would be, or even Porzingis would be. So I think he'll be, if I was a Heat fan, I would be thrilled that Winslow fell to me. As a fantasy prospect, I'm certainly not drafting him in standard leagues. I don't think there's either the two things we always look for, the prolific fantasy players, the person who can really do it on a per possession basis. He's not that, and the opportunity isn't there.
Yeah, exactly. I'm with you 100% with that. The role is not going to be, look, some people think that he's going to have standard league relevance because he's getting drafted to pick 142. And that's wait, look, I know you take a flyer on guys, but you're taking a flyer based on something happening to Dwayne Wade and Luol Deng. And it's not a wise move. Look, he could be a decent player and he could get minutes at some point, but you're right. His numbers don't project that well from a fantasy point of view, especially for this season. I don't think there's a huge amount to really like from him. Even I wouldn't be investing a massive amount in him in dynasty leagues. Yeah, sure, you know, Luol Deng could leave next season and he could be the starter, which I assume is probably the plan at this point for Miami moving forward, but it doesn't mean that he's necessarily going to be a great fantasy guy. He's more like a Harrison Barnes type of fantasy player. I think that's the way he projects in the next couple of seasons. That's the way I sort of see him coming out. Is he going to be that much better real life contributor than fantasy contributor?
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I mean, he's not going to, I don't see the three pointers. The three pointers don't necessarily translate. He should be fine with steals. He'll get a few points and a few rebounds, but he's not going to get elite in either of those categories. So it's kind of like, you know, what's his category? It's probably steals the best category. And I don't think he's above replacement level in any of those other categories until he starts getting like Andrew Wiggins types minutes.
And he's not a guy that projects to have really good percentages either. Like not going to be a great free throw shooter based on his projections. His field goal percentage isn't going to be high. An average sort of 3-point shot as well. His numbers don't project all that well. As much as, look, he could be good and he could have situations where he's put into bigger roles this season, I'm not buying it for standard leagues for this year. And I said, I'm not investing a massive amount in him in dynasty formats. What about Richardson? Do you know much about Josh Richardson?
No, I don't.
Okay, he's a shooting guard from Tennessee. I really like him. I think that he could fill a role on this team. Obviously, he's going to be behind Winslow. He's going to be behind Gerald Green. He's probably going to place behind Tyler Johnson. He has to compete with James Ennis for a roster spot, and from all accounts that he's likely to make the roster over Ennis at this point. He's a deep dynasty type of stash player where we're looking at the next two seasons or so before he has any sort of impact or any sort of value. And I don't think he's going to have a huge impact this season, but as I said, second round picks is always someone who has somewhat of a surprise. And I think that he's a guy that shows a little bit to me, and he could be someone who is worth just keeping an eye on the name and realizing that he is a player who could develop into something that is useful for the Heat and for fantasy teams, but it's probably a little bit of a long shot. What about breakout players, Mark? Is there anyone on this team that you see as being a real breakout candidate?
Does Hassan Whiteside count?
Yeah, I don't know. When I was doing this, I don't know if he counts. He was obviously a breakout candidate last season, but does he get better than last season?
I mean, I think the opportunity is for the minutes to change, right? Like, we saw him play big minutes towards the end of the season, but he only played 23 and a half minutes last season, or 23.8, yep. I think. To me, he is the most interesting player in preseason right now. As far as where to draft him, I don't know what to do with him, because from what he showed us last year, he could be close to, if not a first-round pick. However, I could also see a scenario play out where he's not in the league in 2 years.
The risk with him is it's out of control. We just don't know. And we saw it last year in the midst of his breakout last season, him just doing stupid shit, basically. There's flying elbows to the back of Kelly Olynyk's head, getting thrown out, technical fouls. Just, I'm like, what is this guy doing? Playing on a minimum contract, with a team fighting for playoff spots, just doing dumb stuff. But when he's on the court, he's able to put up really, really big numbers, or he was able to put up really big numbers. Even the last 2 weeks of the season, he averaged 17 points, 12.5 rebounds, 3.2 blocks on 68% shooting. Like, those numbers are so, so big. He also shot 38% from the free throw line. So he fits into that punt free throw mold, and he took 6 free throw attempts per game in that stretch as well. So that's, that's big. That's DeAndre Jordan, Andre Drummond level punt free throw. So he's not a guy to me that I want much to do with unless I'm punting free throws, because it's not like his free throws started to get better as the season rolled on. He shot 50% from the line for the year. The last month of the season, he was at 45. It was decreasing. It got worse. The attempts went up. The negative impact of him in that category was significantly worse. I don't think he's necessarily 100% need to avoid in Roto guy, but he's pretty close to it, in my opinion. How do you see him? He's currently being drafted at pick 30, was it 32, I think it is. Is that too high for you in a head-to-head league? What's your thoughts on him in a Roto league?
I'm with you on the Roto league. I mean, the free throws were you. Although there's so many of these guys at this point, I sometimes wonder. Sometimes I take the approach of, like, I will take one of them and hope that I can at least just beat the I can beat the Andre Drummond owner. I can beat the Dwight Howard owner. I can beat the DeAndre Jordan owner. And maybe I can get 4 or 5 points in free throw percentage, even though I've got Hassan Whiteside.
It's a risk there, because then you have the risk, okay, you can do that, but what if the Andre Drummond owner then gets DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard and Mason Plumlee?
Yep.
And then they're just, they're one, then you're a two. And then you go, oh, then what do I do? Like, you're hoping it gets spread out. It might get spread out, but it also might get concentrated into one guy, and you're just left sitting. Like, he might be sitting at 60%. You might be at 71, and then everyone else is at 76, and then you're getting 2 points from that category, and then you need to get 11 in every other category to win.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. In head-to-head, I mean, last year, on a per-possession basis, he averaged, or per 100 possessions, he averaged 26 points, 22 rebounds, 6 blocks on 63% shooting. That's a guy you can build around on your head-to-head team. So I would say the thing that doesn't – free throw percentage is not what scares me about Hassan Whiteside. I think if it was a different player that had those stats, he should be going higher than what he's going. But we've seen him be cut by multiple teams, and I don't think it was like he wasn't good for those teams in training camp, or he wasn't good. Like, it's not that Memphis and Sacramento didn't see – Memphis cut him twice last year. It's not like – Hassan Whiteside was bad in Memphis and then really, really good in Miami. They just decided not to deal with him. So it makes me really nervous. Like, the drafts that I've done where it's gotten to me, I almost am relieved when Hassan Whiteside goes before my pick, even though he would be a good value. Like, if he's coming up and a couple other guys come up and then somebody else picks him right before me, usually with that type of guy, you would be going, oh, staying at Lake.
Yep.
I really wanted that guy. I was really hoping for him. And with Whiteside, for me, it's been the exact opposite. So I'm like, oh, that's a relief. Now I don't have to decide what to do with Whiteside, because you don't want to ruin your team in the first two or three rounds. And I think that's what Whiteside has the potential to do. At the same time, if you get him in the third round and he's a first rounder, that can certainly help you win.
Yeah.
I think a lot of concerns there.
I think I'm going to be avoiding him. Just for that reason, because I just don't know what to make of it, really. And I'm probably going to be, I'm happy to let him slide, and he might go off, but the risk in that second, third round zone is pretty high with him, because we just don't know what we're going to get from him, to be honest. Like, nobody really knows, so he does.
What's the round that you feel like, because I think I'm the same as you, like, I don't want to take the risk on him, but what's the round where you're like, well, shoot, I have to, like, I can't pass on him again.
Well,
is it the third round? Is it the fourth round?
I think it's fifth, definitely. I'd have to be punting free throws. I'm not going to be building up this great free throw percentage team and then having fall to me in the fifth and then me grab him. If I've grabbed guys early on and my free throw percentage isn't great, if he's there in the, if I say it's end of the fourth, around that 45 to 48 range, then I think I'm okay with him. But I don't want to go inside the top 35. No, that's what it boils down to, is that I'm probably not going to end up picking him. And there's going to be lots of players I'm going to be like with that. Yeah, I like them at probably what they're – I like them at certain spots, but based on where they're going to go. Like, you know, I like Giannis Antetokounmpo a lot. I'm probably not going to have him anywhere, because he's going to go way higher than what I want to pick him. Just for that reason, that people are going to go – two rounds higher than where I like. And Whiteside's going to be one of those players as well. LaMarcus Aldridge is going to be one of those players as well. Well, I'm not.
He's been one of those.
Yeah. Like,
what sort of playing time do you think Whiteside's going to get this year? I think that's as big of a question. There's a middle case scenario where he stays on the team and is productive, but has a limited role too.
Well, I've got him at currently at 25 minutes. And that allows, you know, with all the other big men, with Bosch to get his 34 minutes, Stoudemire to get 20, McRoberts to get 23, and that allows all those minutes to sort of work together. And if you give him too much more, it's going to put Stoudemire way low. McRoberts is going to play a significant role. I can't see him getting too much more than that. What do you see his minutes at?
Yeah, I mean, I think people listening would say the Heat would be crazy to play Whiteside only 25 minutes per game.
Yep.
Right, like, we've seen how good he is. Bob Cousy said he's the next Bill Russell.
Yeah, that's probably a little bit of overstatement there.
I mean, what do I know if Bob Cousy thinks that?
Fair enough.
But the Heat have come out and said, basically, we're not going to play this guy a lot of, you know, we're not going to get him into the 30 to 35 minute range. We're going to maybe play some small ball, so that means. That doesn't necessarily mean that when Whiteside is out that McRoberts is in or Stoudemire is in. It could be they're playing Bosch with Deng and Winslow.
Yep.
So I think a fair expectation, especially considering his other risks, is somewhere between 25 to 27 minutes per game. I could definitely see it going higher than that. You could see it going lower than that. But just all the indications that the Heat have given us, which, you know, we kind of take as the grain of salt anyway. But he only played 24 minutes a game last season. So I don't think that if you're expecting Whiteside to play 30 minutes per game or over, you haven't built yourself any profit there.
No, that's exactly his best bet. Yeah, and I stress this so often, is guys, especially like this, you don't want to draft them at ceiling. Like, you don't want to go, Whiteside could play 32 minutes a game and he could be at 16 and 15 with 5 blocks or whatever, but that's ceiling, and so much has to break right for him. You want to be a little bit more down on him at this point and think, yeah, that could happen, but yeah, all these reasons that we've mentioned, he might not get to that level, and he's still going to be productive in 25 minutes. He's still going to have significant fantasy value, and he's still going to be easily a top 50 player in a head-to-head league, even in 25 minutes, but you need to build in value into that pick as well, or at least some sort of value. You don't want to be picking right at the, like, oh, in a 1% chance he does this, therefore I'm picking him at this level, because that's not how it works. That's not how you win, I don't think, is by taking everyone right at their ceiling, because it just doesn't build you any. Your risk is so high, and you've got no ability to really no ability for or no buffer for something to go wrong. I think is the way that I'm trying. That's the word I'm trying to get out.
You're gonna be disappointed. You're most likely gonna be disappointed.
Yep. And
if you take White right at the beginning of the second round because you think he's gonna get 30 minutes a game, that might happen, and then he's met your expectation. If that doesn't happen, you're gonna be disappointed.
Yeah, that's exactly right. What about sleeper players on this team? Is there anyone that you see as a sleeper? To me, I look at this team and they fall into big market sort of, which we've talked about on numerous other shows, that it's really hard to find sleeper players on these bigger teams with more popular players, more well-known players. Yeah. Everyone seems to go a round or so early. Is there any built-in value with any of these players?
Well, so sleeper to me might mean different than what it means to most people. I think sleeper to me means somebody who's just getting drafted lower than they should.
Yeah, that's how I look at it too.
Yeah, so this is not a guy that I love or really have ever drafted before, but I've ended up with Goran Dragic in almost every draft that I've done.
Okay.
And again, not because I think he's going to be doing something preposterously good this year, but if we look at his splits from last year, he averaged 2 more assists per 100 possessions with the Heat than he did with the Suns. And that's not a fluke. Like, we know that they had the 3-point guard system going. We know that he wasn't happy. And then when he got to Miami and he had the ball in his hands, we know that he was a lot more productive. He kind of recovered that. He gave fantasy owners the value that they were expecting when they drafted him. And I think with another year in that system, like having gone through training camp with them trying to maintain Wade's, health for the playoffs, I think that Dragic is going to be their number one sort of ball handling. He's going to have the ball in his hands the most on offense. He's going to be the creator and the distributor and a lot of times the scorer. And we've seen what he can do in that sort of role in years past. So I expect sort of a bounce back season for Dragic, but closer to like what he was doing at the end of last season, which, you know, and he's being drafted 2 or 3 rounds below that, I think.
So he's being drafted to pick 43. So you think he can be a top 30 player?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I don't have that high hopes for him in Miami. The big unknown for me with that is how he's going to work with Chris Bosh. They didn't play a single minute together last season. It's an extra sort of mouth to feed offensively. And you look at their starting five, it's Dragic, Wade, Deng, Bosch, Whiteside. There's, you know, obviously Wade and Bosch are pretty high usage players. Yeah, his assists might go up. His scoring is not going to be the same scoring player that he was in Phoenix, I don't think. But one of the keys at Dragic is his efficiency is superb. Like, he's a 50% shooter as a point guard, which is amazing. There's not many of those guys, if any of those guys around. Solid free throws, not spectacular, not big turnover numbers in a 9 category league. He's not a big steals guy. He's not a big 3-pointer guy. I don't know. I'm okay with him, but I don't think he goes that high.
Yeah, I think the 3-pointers will be just as good or better in Miami. I know that he was in sort of a 3-point friendly offense before, but I think the Heat, you know, they played so much for 3-pointers. And I remember back to when he was so good with Channing Frye.
Yep.
And Chris Bosh is only a better version of Channing Frye. You're right. There are a lot of mouths to feed, but like, how many games is Wade going to actually play this season? Maybe
that's the other thing.
58 to 65, yeah. You know, in that range. And I think I don't think Dragic is going to get 20 points per game, but I think with all the other things that he's doing for you, the assists and the threes, and he's going to score fine. You know, I think he'll be in the 16, 17, 18 point range. I think he's going to go back to the value that he had a few years ago in Phoenix.
Look, he's going to go one of two. I think 43 is a little high. You think he's going to exceed that value. And he does have that potential. We know he can be top 20 valuable if things go right for him. And I think you'll find him probably slide past 43 in a lot of drafts. I think you'll find him outside the top 50. And then you start getting real value on him. And then I'm getting all in on that sort of point. If he gets outside the top 50, I'm all over it. But inside it, there's probably other guys that I would prefer. And again, it all depends on what you're doing. If you've got a team that you're trying to build your field goal percentage up, you're not going to pick Kemba Walker in that spot. Yeah. You're not going to pick Ricky Rubio. But if you're not necessarily caring about your field goal percentage, Rubio is going to give you so many more assists and bigger steal numbers, and that might be more valuable. And this is something I stress as well a lot, Mark, is rankings are fine, and people like looking at lists, but in the end, it means nothing. Like, it doesn't mean a thing when you look at rankings, because each pick is extremely team dependent. That's why I love fantasy basketball. It's not fantasy football where everyone's got a point number. This guy is projected to average 20 points. This guy is going to average 21. Like, you get to pick 50, and Dragic is available, Walker's available, Rubio's available, Conley's available. I'm sure there's other guys that are available. What do you need? Do you need to be, you know, a point guard who's going to not hurt your field goal percentage? Dragic is the guy. Do you need 8 assists? Well, Dragic isn't going to get you 8 assists, but Ricky Rubio is, and he's going to be available. Or do you need a guy like Kemba Walker who's not going to turn the ball over at all, but he's going to score 18 points and hit 1.5 threes? And, you know, who do you want? You know, do you want Jeff Teague there? Like, is Kyle Lowry slipped to pick 40? Like, there's so many guys that are around there, and it's all to do with the way that they fit your team. And that's why, yeah, people get, you've got Dragic lower than Walker, or you've got Rubio too high. It doesn't matter, because it is so team dependent that once you get out of that first 10 picks, just throw it up in the air, and it ends up not mattering a huge amount in your rankings list, because after the first 10, the next 30 guys are interchangeable. And then after those guys, the next 50 guys are interchangeable, so to speak. And it's about getting the right player at the right time for your team.
And to that point, to just jump on the end of that, Dragic isn't going to fit in like with a lot of punt strategies, I don't think.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I think, not that he's not good, but he's kind of good in a lot of different places.
He's not
going to be the tops at the top of your list for three or four categories of target going to be out, I would say.
He's the guy that, look, if you're punting free throws, then his value is not derived a lot from free throws. He's only going to be a 76% shooter. So, you know, guys who are big volume, like Kyle Lowry is an 84% guy, that he's going to drop. You know, Dragic isn't going to drop. That's not where he gets his value. It's, again, these guys can swing 10, 20 spots depending on how you're building your team. And again, he's a mid-round point guard, and you'd be pretty happy getting him. And he could go big, and he could also, you know, not fit what you're doing at all. So that's really important to note. What about overvalued players? Do you think there's anyone that's overvalued on this team in terms of where they're currently being drafted?
I mean, I think the go-to answer for the last few years has been Dwayne Wade.
Yep.
you know, until recently, he was still like a first or second or maybe a third round pick. And we just know he's not going, he's still good. He's still great. He's just not going to play the minutes that he needs to, from the standpoint of he's going to miss 20 or 25 games to go that high. I don't sort of have a feel for how high or low he's going this season.
Because the thing with him is his per game numbers are generally pretty good.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
He's going at pick 61, which I think is probably about right for him. And
that's about right.
He's going to go at pick 61, and a lot of that's going to be influenced by auto drafting. I think that in leagues, he's a classic guy who drops. Him and Tim Duncan, they're guys that drop. Yeah, you'll see the draft board go, and it'll be pre-ranked. It'll be listed. There'll be the guys remaining listed on pre-ranks, and you'll always see him and Duncan will always be at the top as the next 5 guys below him go, or the next 10 guys below him go. And you might be at him getting at pick 60, or not even 60, at pick 70. And at pick 70, I'm okay with it. He's going to miss some games, but we're talking a guy who, on a per-game basis, could be a top 40 player, and maybe something goes right and he plays more games. Who knows? Yeah. If he plays 70 games and you pick him at pick 70, that's a win. It's a massive win for you. If you get 70 games out of him at pick 70 as a top 40 type per game player, it's a huge win. But you have to balance that risk reward. And it also goes with, who did you pick before? Did you pick a whole bunch of injury prone guys? Did you pick Brook Lopez before, who's got a chance to miss games, even though he could be awesome? Did you pick, did you pick Kevin Durant with your first pick? There's a risk inherent in picking Kevin Durant at that pick. Any of these guys that you just don't want to load up and go with all these injury prone guys, but if you've gone with all these rock solid players, then grabbing him at pick 70 makes a lot of sense.
How do you feel about him in like a standard like daily moves head to head league?
It's a worry, and I'd want to be getting some value for him in that sort of scenario. As I said, per game, There's a lot to like. I think he leads the team in scoring this year. He's going to give you great assist numbers for a shooting guard, really good steals. Like Dragic, he's going to be a high field goal percentage player from that position, which is not easy to find. He suits a punt free throw model as a guard as well, because he's not a good free throw shooter, and a lot of guards get a lot of value from that position as well. He fits that, but it's a worry, and you're going to need to be able to utilize him. If you don't have an injured reserve spot, I don't love him inside the top 75. But I'm probably going to end up with him on more of my teams than I would anticipate this season because he is going to slide past that 70 range.
I think you're right. But I think for me, it's going to be more in roto leagues than in head-to-head leagues.
Oh, in roto leagues, he has great value. He's like a top, a top 40 sort of guy in a roto league because you can carry him for those 10, 15 games missed a lot easier.
Yep, absolutely.
What else have we got to look at here?
How about Bosch? How do you feel about Bosch?
Yeah, okay.
He's coming off that scary injury.
Well, that's one thing I want to clarify. Mike, I don't like it being called an injury because it's not an injury. It's an illness, and it's not something he went out there and jumped for a rebound and tweaked his lung. Like that's not what happened. It was something that he got blood clots, and it's scary. Look, this is legit life threatening illness. But everything coming out is he's not at any risk, any further risk for it to happen again. It could happen to anyone. It happened to two guys in the NBA last season, which seems completely weird. The fact that we had these odd rashes of injuries, three guys blowing at their Achilles, two guys with blood clots in their lungs. It was weird. It was random. Lucky he caught it. Lucky he saw the signs and was able to discover it early enough for it to be treated. But it's not an injury. It's not like this guy's injury prone. Like he always does his lung every year. Like it's not what happens. I'm not worried about him at all. It's not though. It's not like, men in their lungs. You've always got to be worried. Like it's just something that happened.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about him at that point at all. I'm not concerned about that. I think that, look, he was putting up some pretty good numbers last season, but again, he's going to be squeezed as well by Goran Dragic being there. Now, is he going to average the 21 points that he averaged last season? I would be shocked if he did.
No, I don't think so. I don't think they go have anybody quite over the 20 point
mark.
Maybe Wade kind of gets there, and that's mostly because he's not playing all the games. No, I still think Bosch, especially if he's another guy like. We talk a lot about if you're punting percentages, but if you're not punting percentages and you're targeting them with big guys, he's an excellent, excellent guy to go with because he's going to shoot a pretty good field goal percentage. He's going to shoot a pretty good free throw percentage. He's going to hit some three-pointers on top of that. He's going to get you some steals. He's okay in blocks.
Yeah. He's a triple one guy. He's a one block, one three, one steal type of guy. He's got that potential to be that guy and a 17 and 7 sort of player. The rebounds.
And from the center position, that's awesome.
Awesome value. And I think
he's going to shoot 50 and 80% or something.
Yep. And he's going to be a superb roto player. He's a guy that is a top 20 roto consideration just for his all-round ability. He's going to be able to put up significant numbers head-to-head. Again, I don't know how much I love him at there, but you don't have to pick him that high in a league. You don't have to pick him inside the top 20. He's currently being drafted at 43, which I think is fine if you believe in him. But I just think that the addition of Dragic means he's not going to get back to 20 points. If he was at 20 points, I think that he's a top 35 guy pretty comfortably. But I don't see him getting back to that area. But not concerned about the lungs at all. That's not a worry for me. I think it really needs to be stated that it's not an injury. It's not an athletically induced problem that he had. It was just a freak sort of injury. It's like saying, I'm worried about DeMarcus Cousins coming back because he had viral meningitis last season. Look, the chances of him getting that again are the same, the chances of you getting it, Mark. It's not nothing to do with him. It's nothing to do with the game of basketball. It's nothing to do with fragility of his musculature. Nothing like that. It's just like, you know what? The poor bastard got a blood clot in his lung and, hey, thank God he's all right. And that's about all there is with it.
No, exactly. And that's why I brought it up is because I think there's a chance to sort of take advantage of the situation of people being scared. People get on the clock and they see Chris Bosh's name and they think, blood clock, I'm going to go with the next guy. And maybe you can pick him up a round or two later than you expected.
Yeah, I think that's probably, you got a definite chance of doing that. I've got him inside my top 50, and that's currently where he's being drafted around that time. And in that fourth round, he's a viable target, and he does have upside to go above that. So it's something to keep an eye on in terms of just how he's how he's valued and how you've built your team and the players that you sort of want. But we know what he's going to get. Good percentages, triple one, nice scoring, nice rebounds. Really, really solid player for them. And he's a pretty good guy. What about a guy that you're looking in a perfect situation, Mark, that just needs minutes to thrive? Who's this player on this team that if they were thrust into a 30-minute a night starting role or 30-minute a night role, then becomes a fantasy relevant player?
We saw Tyler Johnson do a few interesting things last year. He had some big scoring games.
Wasn't expecting that name.
I mean, I think we've covered most everybody else on the roster. No, I mean, he doesn't look like an NBA player, but
no,
there was plenty
of games
last season where he looks like he could play with you and I in a rec league.
He'd comfortably have me covered just.
There was a few games last year where he had some high-scoring games, and I'm trying to look up the quote. There was a point where somebody was asking Pat Riley, basically, like, why are you trading away all of your first-round picks? They asked it in a nicer way, and Pat Riley basically responded and said, hey, we picked up Hassan Whiteside and Tyler Johnson this year. Those are our first-round picks. And so, you know, if Pat Riley has that sort of view of Tyler Johnson, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily would be my observation, but Pat Riley obviously carries a lot of sway in that organization. We've seen him have some interesting games. I would be interested to see what he does if he gets a bunch of minutes. I don't think that's going to happen. There's so many players on the team that play his position. I think, you know, it'll be lucky if he sticks with the team for another year, but I would be interested to see what happens.
Definitely. He did have some odd games last season where I was sort of not necessarily out of the blue, but you're like, who's Tyler Johnson? And he put up some numbers. But you're right, he's going to have to compete now with Gerald Green brought in, with Justice Winslow in that area as well. But they do like him more than I think what a lot of people may realize. The guy that I liked in this sort of situation is Josh McRoberts, who we saw have really, really good fantasy value for Charlotte back in 2013-14. Yeah, not a high scorer, but again, one of those players that flies under the radar because he doesn't score a lot of points, but he was a good three-point guy, a massive assist player, like huge assist numbers. And even last season, in his limited playing time or limited time we saw him, he was still at 4 assists per 36 minutes as a power forward, which is superb. Yeah, really nice steal numbers, pretty good block numbers as well. He's
going to shoot the three a little bit.
He's going right. He's going to hit the three. Like if he gets 30 minutes a night, he's going to hit over a three a game. He's going to be over 4 assists a game, 5 rebounds. You know, over half a steal, over half a block. It's not blowing you away, but if you can grab him off the waiver wire and he's in that bigger role and you can get 4.5 assists out of a power forward, that's pretty significant and it can help because you can't find point guards to give you 4.5 assists off the waiver wire normally, and you could find a big man who could slot into that position who could then hit the three, get some rebounds as well. He could be a really valuable player. So just don't forget what he did in Charlotte. Obviously, some things are going to have to break his way and break against what the Heat want to happen. But if it happens, then you pay attention to Josh McRoberts and don't forget what he was able to do that season in Charlotte.
Yeah, and I would say handcuffs aren't a thing in fantasy basketball. No. It's not like when Kevin Durant goes down that Perry Jones is going to step in and give you the exact same value as Kevin Durant like you would see in the NFL. But I would say in a deep league, this is the exception to the rule. Like if you draft Hassan Whiteside early, you need almost have to handcuff him with McRoberts because in the scenarios, in almost all the scenarios where Hassan Whiteside flames out, I think McRoberts steps into that role and can be fantasy relevant.
Well, absolutely. He has fantasy relevancy if he gets into that role. It's going to be interesting to see. Again, that's just another guy they're going to have to integrate into their lineup that we barely saw last season. You know, how does he work with Whiteside? They didn't play together. How does he and Bosch work together? How do him and Dragic work together? They're going to be really fun to watch. The Heat look super. There's going to be a lot of teams that I'm interested to watch, but I can't wait to see what this team does because they have the potential to be special. And if they came out of this season winning the championship, it's not insane, is it? Or is it? Maybe I am.
I would not be surprised to see them make the conference finals.
Okay.
But I would be surprised to see them. I would be shocked to see them win the NBA finals.
Fair enough. Maybe I am insane. What's your take on Luol Deng quickly?
Yeah, we know what Luol Deng is. He's going to be the same that he's been for the last 5 years, right? Like he's going to play less minutes than he played in Chicago because. Eric Spoelstra knows how to make a substitution, but he's not prolific, right? Like we talk about opportunity, talk about what a player's opportunity is, and Deng's is great. Like he's still playing for a coach that plays players a lot of minutes. It's not Thibodeau minutes, but he's still going to play 34 or 35 minutes a game, maybe 33. But he's just not a fantasy prolific player. Like he's a guy that plays a lot of minutes and is still going to be down there, you know, rankings in the 100s or, you know, 95, 96. He doesn't have a ceiling above that. So at that, you know, we've talked about this a million times. At that point in the draft, I know he's going to be the 100th best player. Yep. I want to take probably somebody who has a little more upside. But in a deep league, I'm okay with taking him at pick 100.
Yeah, that's the key. In a deep league, you want that guy at pick 100 who's going to deliver pick 100 value. In a shallower league, taking a guy pick 100, you hope they go higher. Or taking a guy pick 120, you hope they go to pick 80. Whereas Den can do that. He can go to pick 80 if Wade is out, if Bosch is out, and it's him and Dragic as the two guys. He needs to be the second best player on a team to have real significant fantasy value. He's going to be solid, he's going to be steady, but I don't recommend that for a 12-team league necessarily, of grabbing him in that last round, because you want to get something to happen. You don't want to go to guy like, oh, Luol Deng is going to give me that 130 value, and he's going to give me that consistently all season, where I'd rather just continually take a flyer on a guy and hope someone breaks out, because someone will, and not just someone will, 50 guys will. 50 guys that get added off the waiver wire are going to become top 120 players. That's just what's going to happen. You just got to make sure you get the right one.
Yeah, and he's not good at any particular category.
No, that's true as well.
It's not like you can draft him and say, I know he's like a 100th value, but at least I get my 12 rebounds out of him, or at least I get my 2 blocks out of him. No, he's just kind of like replacement level in every. He's probably like the personification of a replacement level player in standard leagues. Like he's perfectly replacement level at every category, which has some value, right? Like you're getting something. You're not hurting yourself anywhere. But nobody's going to be excited when they draft Luol Deng.
No.
And unless it's in a deep league, I'm probably going to try to go somewhere else.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best way of looking at it. He's that good deep league book guy, shallow league guy, even though he will have value. He's not the ideal guy to go for in that situation. Who's your favorite player on this team?
From a fantasy standpoint or from just a...
However you want to look at it.
I mean, the reason I'm going to tune in to watch them is I want to see what Sam Whiteside turns into.
Okay.
Like the first 5 games I'm going to watch of the Heat are going to be, is Hassan Whiteside going to be the starter on the All-Star team this season, or is he going to be in the D-League?
How much did you watch last season of him?
And I'm just going to say, I don't actually think there's a likely scenario where he ends up outside the NBA, but you would never say that with Chris Bosh. Like Chris Bosh's downside is not, well, he could be like playing in Europe in a year.
Yep.
And Whiteside, even though that's an extreme scenario, that is a scenario that's possible. I watched Whiteside a little bit. I think he and Gobert put up similar numbers, but I think Gobert has a much bigger influence on wins and losses than Whiteside does.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Yeah, that's fair enough.
Like
to say.
Both can get 14 rebounds and both can get 5 blocks in a game, but I think Gobert's does it in a different way that allows his team to, you know, keep the other team down to like 87 points, where Hassan Whiteside could get that and the other team could still score 110 points on the Heat.
Yeah, that's fair enough. His positioning is probably not as good as what Gobert's is. His ability to get blocks and rebounds is, but his overall positioning and defensive ability is probably not at that same level as a guy like Gobert. My favorite player on this team is Chris Bosh. I really like what he does. I think he's just, everything you hear about him, he's a really good guy as well. Just a really, and I value that as well in terms of guys that, I don't want to be out there, cheering on a person who's just a real prick, except for Michael Jordan, obviously, who's, arguably one of the biggest assholes in the history of professional sports. I don't mind.
We're above the world.
Yeah, that's
like in just history.
not a good guy. but even then, you sort of go. We have this. I have this. Not necessarily ability, because I don't have much ability. I look at guys and I go, okay, Michael Jordan, you're unquestionably the best guy ever. You can be arrogant. You can be a prick. I look at it in the NFL and Bill Belichick. You can be arrogant. Fine, you back it up. Yeah, did you see the thing with Popovich today, getting interviewed with that guy from NBA TV?
Yeah,
and I think, you know what, that like if that was anybody else doing that, everyone would be killing him. Imagine that was Byron Scott doing that.
Yeah, Byron Scott's get killed for everything he says anyway.
Yeah, look, and I don't like Byron Scott, but if he did that, he would be destroyed. But Pop goes out there, he's a real bastard to this guy. And everyone laughs and go, yeah, you got popped. It's funny because of who he is. And it is, yeah. And I don't know. I can sort of let that stuff go from these guys because how do you come back to it? You go, well, you're, and they go, I'm better than you. And you go, fair enough. You are. And, but coming back to my point, Chris Bosh, he just looked like a good guy. He's a really good teammate. He's a real fun guy. He's a, yeah, everything you hear about him is positive. And I like the way he plays as well. He's been able to transition his game a lot. You know, took on a different role when he teamed up with LeBron, won championships, took on an alpha role again last season. He's probably going to transition into a different role again this year, became a 3-point shooter. Yeah, really efficient guy. I think he's a fantastic player. I think he's tremendously underrated. He gets unnecessarily criticized for so many things, and I don't think it's fair. I think he's fantastic.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
What about all-time, Mark? Who's your favorite all-time player on this team?
Ooh.
Is it,
what about Ronnie Cycli?
Oh, I was just going to say, I hope it's Ronnie Cycli. DJ Ronnie Cycli.
Baby Jordan was a good one, right?
Yes.
Harold Miner.
Yep. He was there.
Was he the first next Michael Jordan?
Yeah, I think he was.
Who ended up out of the league pretty soon. No, I mean, I like Glenn Rice a lot. He was fun to watch shoot.
Yeah, Glenn Rice was good.
I was like shooting a lot. And in the era that, I don't know if I would say when we grew up watching basketball, but kind of in that era, shooters, it wasn't like today. You know what I mean? And I don't want to sound like an old person. I'm still in my 20s, so. Take this the right way, but like it was just a different game in the early 90s and the mid 90s. Like every team had one shooter.
That's exactly right.
When you watch the Pacers, like everybody would run around and just follow Reggie Miller because they knew Antonio Davis and Del Davis and Mark Jackson and Derek McKee were not shooting. Like there was, it wasn't like a 5 spread out offense. Everybody could hit 3-pointers. And Glenn Rice was the same way. Like he was the one shooter. And so, not you know, defenses are better today. It's a much funner game to watch today, but it was always like you knew the one guy who was going to take 3-pointers on the Heat or the Hornets. You know, Rice played for a few teams, but he was a lot of fun to watch because you knew he was going to fire 3-pointers, and those guys made the game, you know, more exciting to me.
Yeah, he was super fun back in the day, and you're right, there was always that one guy, and that's like when I did the Timberwolves preview. And yeah, you know, the guy that I picked as my favorite all-time player was Chuck Person because I just loved him getting out there and just setting up and shooting. And he was a guy that stuck in my mind. But Glenn Rice was a big 3-point shooter. Back in the day, he was averaging, you know, 2 threes a game. And back then, that's crazy. Like, people were averaging, you know, 0.2 threes a game, and that was considered about average. And he was, we talk about, you know, standard scores. His 91-92 season, he averaged 2 threes a game, but that had a standard score of 3.1. Like that's so big. Like that Steph Curry averaged 4 a game, and he was about 3.1 this season. And translating that, like Glenn Rice back then, that's a 4 3-pointer a game sort of guy. He was Klay Thompson, he was Steph Curry in that sort of era because guys just didn't do it, didn't shoot it, and yeah, it was a weird time.
So back to Ronnie Cycli, like I think he's the gangly, weird looking dude that like you unlock on NBA Jam now. You know, people think it's funny to make fun of because he has long hair. But there was a time when he was a really good player. In fact, I think there was a time where I don't remember who turned down the trade, but there was a potential trade for him and some pieces for Hakeem Olajuwon.
Really?
Before the Rockets went on the, there was some kind of a disconnect and or a discontent in Houston before the two championships, and there was a deal on the. Supposedly on the table for Ronnie Cycli and some pieces for Hakeem Olajuwon.
Ronnie Cycli averaged a double-double for 5 straight seasons.
Yeah.
I don't think many people would know that. That's pretty weird.
No.
That's very weird, in fact.
He was a very good NBA player. He was probably their first good NBA player.
Was he a better NBA player or is he a better DJ?
I don't know about the DJ part. You're going to make me like even more. What's the DJ part?
He's like a DJ in Israel now.
Is that true?
Yeah. He's like a legit DJ. I need to find out some more information on this. But he is, his Wikipedia page, he's developing and fulfilling his passion in electronic music as a producer and DJ. You can check out Ronnie Cycli on SoundCloud. He's got his own page on there. He's a legit DJ.
Yeah, so here's I can't believe this is online. I just Googled it. The Sun Sentinel has articles from 1992 online. It says, Keat deny Hakeem Olajuwon rumors. Hakeem Olajuwon had a trade request into Houston, and they're searching for a player, and it was going to be Ronnie Cicely, Grant Long, and the rights to Harold Miner.
Baby Jordan.
Or Sleepy Floyd and Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah.
But the Heat were saying, no, we're not interested in that deal.
Yeah, that's silly, but he was underrated, definitely. He was a decent player. He wasn't that good, but he was a decent player.
No.
My favorite all-time player.
He was good
player.
Enough that they didn't just say no, yes.
That's true. That's stupid, but I can sort of, yeah, and they had the next Michael Jordan as well. So you have to hang on to the next Michael Jordan when you get the opportunity to. Harold Miner had some pretty good dunks back in the day as well. He was a pretty exciting player.
He was great.
About the 4 years that he was relevant. My favorite player is Wade all time. It's hard to go past. He's probably the greatest Heat player of all time. There was other guys there, Alonzo Mourning, Shaq, obviously Tim Hardaway, all those sort of players. But when I think of those guys, I think of them on other teams from when I grew up. Tim Hardaway is a Warriors player to me. Alonzo Mourning, to me, when I think of him first, he's a Hornets guy. As much as he played a stack for the Heat, I always think he started at Charlotte. And I remember teams that upset Boston in that playoff series, him and Larry Johnson. He's a Charlotte guy, the first in my head. Shaq, he's a Magic player. He's a Lakers player. He's not a Heat player in my mind. And Dwayne Wade.
You don't think about Shaq on the Cavs?
Or the Celtics. Yeah, the Celtics. Yeah, Shaq on the Cavs and Celtics. Well, if you look back and look at pictures of him, he looks like he weighs 400 pounds. He was massive. He looks so big on those teams. And remember when him coming to Cleveland was the missing piece for LeBron to win? Didn't work out too well.
Yep. No.
Wade's my guy. He's the greatest Heat player of all time.
Yep, and he's awesome.
We know how good he is. We know the injuries have been a concern for him, but he's superb. Mark, we're done. You need to run. You need to go to work. Remind everyone where they can find you on Twitter.
You can look at Mark F. Roberts, and Mark is spelled with a C.
Mark is indeed spelled with a C, the only way to spell it. Go ahead and follow Mark on Twitter and follow me at redrock_bball. And don't forget to check out this podcast on the Hardwood Paroxysm Basketball Network. Subscribe to, of course, this podcast and the other podcasts on Hardwood Paroxysm and leave us all a glowing review. And check out Basketball Monster. I'm going to have some head-to-head punt building strategy guides go up in the next couple of days. They've taken me a while and they are coming up pretty soon. The next few days they should all be up and ready to go, along with a few more things coming. We've got one more team preview podcast left, Mark. And that's the Dallas Mavericks, and that will be coming on Thursday morning. Thursday morning, stateside. There is a lot to talk about with Dallas. And
who's coming on with you?
Well, coming on to talk Dallas with me is actually my brother. We're going to be doing a Lloyd Brothers fantasy preview of the Mavericks. He's a Mavericks fan, and we're going to be talking Mavericks. And there's a lot to digest with Dallas.
I'll be watching with my John Jenkins shirt on.
You're going to get plenty of shout-outs on that podcast as the only man in the world who is on the John Jenkins bandwagon.
You bet it, man. I'm buying all the John Jenkins stock right now.
Well, you own him in every league, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I've even owned him all the mock drafts I've done.
Yep. Yeah, there is going to be a lot of John Jenkins discussion, and your name is going to be brought up quite a bit. Mark, thank you for coming on, and thank you for taking part in this season preview podcast after we missed out on your goodness from Portland, but we got you on and we got you here speaking.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Josh. It was a good time.
No problem. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. See ya.